Found this in Gunner Room. Gunner Mirror.
What is it?
Well, it's
Sick Performance.
Welcome to Synthaholics, guys. Today, with me is I'm David Duncan, and with me is Aaron O'Brien and Faith Hertzberg. And we have two special guests today. We have Jessica Slawinski and Tim Crosby from Disruptor Beam. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hello.
Hi, thank you.
So you guys are both working on Star Trek Timelines now, right?
That is correct.
Could you both tell us what your role is in the company, what you work on specifically? And kind of explain it a little bit so our listeners can kind of know what you guys do?
Sure. So for those who don't know, Star Trek Timelines is an upcoming mobile and social game, which means that it will be available on pretty much any device, any platform you can think of, as long as it's connected to the internet. My role is, as lead designer, is doing a lot of the game design work around systems and really kind of living in spreadsheets and documentation and helping to define what the interactions for the game are going to be.
Cool. How about you, Jessica?
I am a lead narrative designer / lead writer, and what that means is I basically handle the story for the game, of course, in conjunction with the designers running things past them and making sure everything works as a whole. And that's the exciting thing about this game. It is the kind of game that actually needs a narrative designer / writer, because we are trying to have a really deep story where you can interact with all characters from every series and most of the films, and you can, you know, talk to them and make decisions that affect how your story plays out, and managing herding all those cats is kind of what I do.
Very cool.
And from what I was told at PAX, just looking and playing the game, correct me if I'm wrong, but the core concept is the space-time continuing is, like, fractured, and they're all, like, melding together, which is why you get all these different characters from all the different series. How is it, like, creating a game that incorporates so many characters and so many potential storylines?
So
I mean,
first...
go ahead, Tim.
No, go ahead, Jessica.
All right, I'll go for it. I find it to be a sort of embarrassment of riches, because we can pull from every series and any time and any universe and any film with the original and Next Generation cast. And like you said, basically there has been what we're calling the temporal anomaly crisis. A whole bunch of temporal anomalies have just started popping up, and people are being flung about from universes and times, and ships are being flung about, and places are being changed, and it's all chaos. But that's the fun of it, that you can interact with all these different people that you naturally would not get to interact with if there were not this crisis going on.
Yeah, I think it's super fun and also super challenging. Which is what's so great about having Jessica be around to think not only what the cool situations all the characters can be in, but keeping their voices accurate, and having the, you know, Sulu needs to sound like Sulu and Picard needs to sound like Picard, regardless of the situation they find themselves in. And it's great to have the opportunity to play with those new situations, but also, you know, just a lot of work to make it feel authentic.
Yeah, I believe that. There seems to be there's a ton of characters that you can use, and then, like you said, you have to actually embody what that character boils down to, what they're like, and then how they would react to certain situations, and how they their cadence in some ways.
Well, speaking with John Radoff at PAX East, he was saying there's even going to be not just one character, but sometimes, I mean, not just one version of the character, but multiple versions, like the Tapestry Picard. And So that's also, is that an additional challenge to write, like, different versions of the character?
I mean, you know, like everything, it's a challenge and a pleasure. John Radoff, our founder and CEO, for those that don't know, is totally correct. We want to have, you know, eventually, perhaps not at launch, but eventually every single, you know, version of Picard you've ever seen on the show and in the films. But every single version of Picard, they're not all going to act like one single Picard. You know, they're from different eras of his life, you know, before or after certain things have happened. They've all got different outlooks. You know, Academy Picard, who got, you know, stabbed by the Nausicaans, is going to react to things differently than seasoned Captain Picard, who's going to react differently to Picard, who's already been through his whole ordeal with the Borg. So it is, yeah, challenging to put yourself in all those different mindsets, but it's also super fun.
Yeah, it's cool. And from the past interviews that Dave did as well, it seems like the universe is going to be very robust, too, that you can go in and see and explore different things, different solar systems, different areas of space as well. So you're not just stuck on like a one track, you know, do this, then point A, then B, then C. It seems like you have like multiple ways you can handle those challenges. Am I correct in assuming that?
Yeah, well,
there's definitely go ahead, Tim.
Yeah,
you go first this time.
All right, I'll go first this time. Yeah, thank you. Well, there's this big benefit we have from Star Trek being a sort of episodic television show where they encounter, you know, space is vast and there's all these different dangers out there and all these different situations they find themselves in. And so there's this real benefit that we have, which is that we can have that sort of feeling to it, that you can come across all these different things in different areas of the galaxy. But similarly, they have a lot of consistent you know, stories that play across multiple multiple episodes or multiple seasons, and so we're also working on a way to make that feeling in that sense continue on as well.
Well, I know from playing the Game of Thrones Ascent game that y'all have done expansions for that to expand the story and what's going on in the world. And I know this is going to be a little bit more free-flowing with all the different times converging in the Star Trek history. Are y'all going to be like expanding it story-wise that way as well?
Oh, yeah, certainly. Like, I mean, that, without getting too specific, I mean, as you've seen in Game of Thrones Ascent, we've kept going, you know, with updates long after it was initially released, and we hope to do that with Star Trek timelines. It's not just, here's the game, we're done, we're all going to the Bahamas.
Yeah, so we certainly, well, maybe
we
afterwards.
Certainly hope to, yeah, maybe for a week.
But remote tech support.
So we hope to keep putting stuff out and expanding the story, and obviously there's so much there in the IP that we cannot, there's no way, have it all at launch. So certainly we would keep putting out things as we seek to cover as much of everybody and everything as possible.
Wow.
So in Game of Thrones Ascent, I know you like build like different buildings and they give you access to different things. So like with Star Trek, there's not really buildings, you've got ships. Are there going to be like, are you going to have to like build out the interior of your ship to get access to things?
The way we're thinking about ships is less about them as access and more of them as a bonus to what you're choosing to do. So your ships are going to be upgradable. You'll be able to improve them. But rather than acting as a sort of, you need this ship to go see this part of the galaxy, it's more that, for example, a Federation science vessel would help you to overcome a challenge about like science better than a Klingon Klingon bird of prey.
Right, right.
Yeah, speaking of the Bird of Prey, I saw that video earlier. I shared it with my co-host. It was pretty cool looking.
Yeah, nice looking. Nice Bird of Prey.
But the Bird of Prey, you know, it's it's a great thing about Star Trek that, you know, we have all of these canon, very iconic looking ships, very iconic looking equipment, and just the whole look of the show and the movies that we can build off of and put into the game. It's also, as with everything, like we really want to make sure that we get it right. So there's a lot of care given to that Bird of Prey and all of the other ships and everything else in the game. And we know that we're probably going to make a few mistakes and people will tell us, and then we're going to fix them as quickly as possible.
Does that worry you that there would be a lot of canon issues, those people, that they might get frustrated?
You know, not so much. I mean, we're fans, so the most important thing is to maintain, to be true to the spirit of the show and the spirit of the of any given character or any given story that we're telling. I think that there's so many precise details that we know we're gonna get a couple wrong just because it's this big project and there's so much to be doing, and we're gonna try to get things as absolutely precisely correct as possible. So we're gonna try to get every button and every color on an image of a tricorder correct. That's always something that we can, being a live game, that's something we can fix later, and we will fix if we do get it wrong. But that's a little bit less important than making sure that Picard acts like Picard rather than Picard acting like, you know, Gowron.
Good point.
Or Wesley.
or Wesley.
She golly.
Yeah, and we've seen there's obviously many instances where the creators of the show and the films made their own canonical mistakes of canon that they made up. So yes, we would hope that if fans forgive them, they will forgive us.
Right.
I'm pretty mean about canon. I'm very like, if things aren't backed up by other parts of Star Trek, I kind of like veer on the side of maybe it's not really canon. Like the whole Threshold episode.
Oh, well, that's
everyone's kind of got their own headcanon going on, right?
Yeah.
Where they're just like, I didn't like that. That doesn't exist in my version of
just everything about the episode's so messed up.
Well, yeah, Threshold's a different story. I'm kind of not a big fan of Threshold, but I'm not a big canon. I mean, I want it to be relatively within canon, but if it breaks loose here and there, it doesn't bother me as much. Talking about that, when you're talking about characters and their different thing, I was just had the idea of if you had a Worf and Kirk on the same bridge, if Kirk would treat Worf poorly because he's a Klingon. That was a thought I had in my head.
You know, if it's pre-Star Trek 6, no, pre-Star Trek 3, maybe not as meanly as post-Star Trek 3, right?
Right, yeah, after his son was killed. So, I don't know, just a thought. I don't know if you thought that.
Yeah,
one
he might
yet.
Be a little angrier. Yeah, post three.
I don't know. Kirk
and would he be
strikes...
would he be less or more angry post six? Is an interesting question. Did six make it better for him or worse for him?
Right, right, exactly.
Probably a little column A, a little bit of column B.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think Kirk is someone who judges individuals by their merit. So I think he'd be okay with Worf. That's my feeling.
That's interesting, because I would kind of feel you'd kind of like give him a hard time for quite a long time until he proved his...
I don't know. Like in the beginning in Star Trek 6, he's like, I never trust the Klingons. I never will. I'll never forgive them for the death of my son. That's a pretty blanket like racial hatred.
Yeah,
they'd probably go to the rec room and wrestle it out, and then they'd be buddies.
Worf would make him wear a bandana so he couldn't see, and then he'd have to like wrestle him.
Yeah, yeah. That sounds like a bonding experience for both of them.
Actually, they probably would bond pretty well for that, knowing Kirk.
Oh, yeah, and Charlie Axe, he was into wrestling.
Yeah, oh, yeah, definitely.
Hey, nothing says hello and you're a good friend like a punch to the face.
And sweaty chest on chest.
Oh.
Well, Kirk's would be well nared or whatever they did back then, so.
Yeah, oiled. Yes.
Nared and oiled.
Yeah.
If you're going to go there, you might as well be accurate.
I agree. Absolutely. Very cool.
So, all this attention you have to pay to the game and trying to be as canonical as possible, if canonical is the word, canonical.
During the canon.
Yes. With that, are y'all binge-watching Star Trek a lot? Do y'all, like, just hang out after work and, like, watch some Star Trek? Or are y'all, like, just have it playing in the background while you're at work?
We have a lot of I don't think we've organized any group sessions yet, but we have all been binge watching it on our own at different rates. I think if you met Rich Gallup, he just finished Deep Space Nine. I cannot remember where you are, Tim. I want to say you're also in Deep Space Nine. Is that right?
I am 3/4 of the way through all of Star Trek in this incarnation of my watching. So I am now into Voyager, and I've watched all the movies and all the other shows.
Somebody else is about the same place I am.
Yeah, I'm on season 7 and Voyager and Deep Space Nine. Like, I basically watch Deep Space Nine and then I watch Voyager. Then I reward myself with watching more Deep Space Nine after I watch a Voyager episode.
Oh, come on, Voyager's been fun. It's treated me well at work.
Well, it's definitely interesting watching it again, because I watched, you know, TNG and DS9 and Voyager when they were airing, and, like, certain things I think I'm responding to differently now. Like, I am less annoyed by Neelix at this point than I recall being.
I kind of felt the same way.
Yeah, like, he's kind of useful, right? Like, he's good at stuff. You can
see it.
Yeah, exactly.
He's not just the annoying guy that talks too much and does the wrong thing all the time. There's actually a purpose.
Right, exactly.
I like him in The Haunting of Deck 13. That was a fun episode.
That was a good one. I also liked the one with the two prophets, the Ferengi. That was a pretty fun episode.
Oh, that was great, because it reaches back to
TNG. He's the grand proxy Neelix.
Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah.
So, with y'all working on a Star Trek game, could you tell us about how you guys got? Because you said you're all fans, like, kind of working on this game. So, like, can you tell us, like, where your fandom kind of started and how you got into Star Trek?
Sure. I am gonna. You're going to figure out my age here. I started watching Voyager when it first came out, and I was about to be a teenager, and maybe I was a teenager at that point. I can't remember. I was around that age. And so I started watching it when it first came out, and I was super into it. My mom told me it was apparently, like, I made everyone sit down and watch it. Like, even if they didn't like Star Trek, the rest of my family, I was like, this is appointment television. We're all sitting down with popcorn and watching it.
That's cool.
So, yeah, we watched it religiously. And then my mom was like, you know, there's a lot more of this, right? And I was like, there's more? And they and then she showed me her favorite, which was Next Generation. And from there, I saw, you know, Deep Space Nine. And I never did watch all of original series or Enterprise up until now. Those are the ones that I'm catching up the most on in my binge watching. But that's kind of where I came from. You might have seen, if you've seen all of Disruptor Beam's blog posts about Star Trek, I was Deanna Troi one Halloween as a kid.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, my mom made me a costume. I wore a big 80s black curly hair wig. And so that's me.
That's the
best.
That's
awesome. That's really cool.
Wow. That's great.
Yeah. So my conscious memory is starting with Next Generation, but I'm pretty sure that I watched a fair amount of the animated series on some rerun before then. So I'm pretty sure I was primed from a young age to be in a sort of a Star Trek mindset. and then when I watch all Next Generation when it was airing, and it was airing then much of DS9, much of Voyager when it aired, and I definitely spent one summer when I was watching Next Generation, where I, like, went to the video store and I got videos of all of the original series, so I made sure to, like, watch all of the original series during that time also.
That's cool. Yeah.
But the animated series still has a special place in my heart. I kind of love it.
I'm not super fresh on it. I have rewatched Yesteryear recently, and that was a really good episode.
Yeah, the thing about the animated series is that, like, I think some of the scripts were kind of originally intended for the original series, so the animation is pretty low budget and looks kind of hokey, but the actual stories are pretty good.
Yeah, and I like that they were capable of doing things with animation that they would just never would have been able to do with special effects, especially back in the 60s, or, well, 70s when that came out, but that they could kind of do with their with animation. But you're right, yeah, those stories were more adult-driven, just they were kind of like pandering it to children, which I think is a great idea anyways. But
so on timelines, with I got to see the build at PAX East. I assume lots of work has happened since then. Like, have there been any new major features integrated into the game yet that y'all can talk about?
Yes, there have been new features. I don't think that I can talk about them. I don't think.
Well, I had to ask because
yeah,
well,
there's also been improvements on a lot of the features you saw at PAX East. So, the entire conflict resolution system, the core idea behind it has remained the same. So that core idea of you being able to sort of solve a challenge with diplomacy or with science or go in sort of phasers and photon torpedoes, that core concept is the same, but the way that sort of gets visualized and a lot of that information presentation and the interaction there has been worked on a lot, so that's been honed and refined, and it plays very smoothly and really nicely now. There's been more work on the galaxy map and traveling from star system to star system. So, in addition to the new features, which I can't really talk about right now, there's also been just improvement on an iteration on some of those features you saw at PAX East, and the continuing content development in a sort of similar style. So, we had one storyline that folks could play through there. We have more stories. We have more characters that we're working on integrating into the game. We have, or we're working on more ships. So all of that's continuing to move forward.
Yeah, not to rehash our most recent blog post too much, but it's something I know I can talk about. If you saw the most recent blog post about the galaxy map and factions and story choices, as you can see on that galaxy map, you know, it's obviously not final, but we're starting to throw around some canonical systems that we want in at launch. We're starting to figure out the various factions at play on the map, why they're fighting, you know, what they're fighting about, how you're gonna intervene in that or sway it from one side to the other, stuff like that. So yeah, like Tim said, a lot of things happening, a lot of movement being made of the vague variety.
Things are happening.
Oh, things are always happening in game development. They've got to. It's. I'm sure it's nuts. I mean, I do a little bit of indie game development. I do game jams that are local around here in Buffalo, and it's chaotic doing those little jams. So doing actual game development's got to be like 10 times worse.
Yeah, all thought out and strategic. That's got to be rough.
So John said the game should be out like later this year. So. Do we have any ETA on the beta, maybe?
Before it's out.
We do not.
Before it's out.
Yeah. Sorry.
Well, you know.
Another thing I really had to ask, because I was really, really wondering if there's any news on that. Because I mean, playing it at PAX.
If you're in the Bridge Crew program and all that, you will be the very first to know. We promise you that.
Oh, I've been signed up well before PAX East. So,
yeah.
So listeners, yeah. If you want to get into this beta, go to disruptorbeam.com and sign up for that Bridge Crew. And I'm definitely going to have the link to that in the show notes so that you guys can take a look at that. So,
there's more.
You
also get a free tribble in the game when you sign up for the Bridge Crew program.
Do I want a free tribble?
Yeah, it'll be good. I promise you, it'll be good.
It's a useful tribble.
Does one tribble turn into a million tribbles if you feed it right?
It it does not. Well, because I would claim that's feeding a triple wrong.
Oh.
Poor character triple.
Actually, in the Treble with Tribbles, they weren't even trying to feed the tribbles, and they just was in millions of them.
Yeah, yeah. This will
games
be,
we call that an exploit.
Yeah, yeah. This one won't eat all your grain. It won't take over your ship. It'll be good.
But that's Tribbles working as intended, right?
Right. Yeah, yeah. It's Tribbles in the happy in the happy good pet sense.
The purring kind,
rather than the
You keep it in permanent cold locker like they had at Delta Vega in the Star Trek 2009, where it doesn't breed when it's cold.
Oh, that's funny.
Just keep it in the cooler.
That's funny.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that is the extra incentive, and I realize that players who are more aligned with the Klingon mentality might not be excited about that. But
is there also an incentive for a pet Targ?
We have not figured out if we are going to have a pet Targ or not. I am lobbying for it, nice. but we need to figure it out.
So, like, Targs have had lots of different incarnations. There's one, like, a pig dressed up as a Targ, and there was, like, just a big animatronic, and then there's been CGI Targs. Targs have looked very different over the years in Star Trek.
I think of a Targ as the pig with the horn and the ruff, mostly because in Star Trek III, they never called it a Targ, so I wasn't sure if it was a Targ or not.
That could have been the Chihuahua of the Targs or something. Nice. The one thing I keep joking with Dave, just because we found a ridiculous ship, the Horta ship, the USS No Kill Eye. I think it's based off a novel or something. It's basically a giant rock potato with some nacelles.
And a little bit of a saucer sticking out.
Yeah. I don't know if you're aware of this, but that would be a really crazy ship to have.
It would be crazy. So the way that our deal works, our licensing deal, is that we have access to the television shows and the 10 movies involving the original series cast and the Next Generation cast. What that means that we actually can't use non-canon stuff that or secondary canon stuff. So we're not really able to take things from the from like books, and we don't want to take things from like fan movies, because those rights are not something we have access to, and we want to stay on the right side of the law. We can make up stuff, but I don't know if we're going to make up potato rocks with nacelles.
just do an image search for USS No Kill Eye. You'll be amused. Anyways,
the ship that's most important to me is the shuttle that's made out of the Gillette razor with the Gillette logo still on it that I think was in Encounter at Farpoint. I want that one, man. With the Gillette razor with the Gillette logo still on it, Tim. We need to talk to the Gillette people about that.
Yeah, well, we should get right on that then, to talk to them.
Yeah.
So does No Books also include some of those old technical manuals that had the Enterprise and like the Dreadnought and the Sandlin class ships in them?
A list of CBS from CBS of the technical manuals and the companions and books of that nature that they consider current and canonical, and those are the ones that we are referencing.
Cool.
Oh, that'll be good, because I love some of those, like, those old technical manuals, old ships. They look really great.
Yeah, they're really cool looking.
So, when I emailed you guys before the show, I kind of asked you what your kind of favorite episode or series was. Jessica, you said you were really big into Voyager and Next Generation, and Tim, we got from you Devil in the Dark and Lower Decks, and I did specifically watch Lower Decks and Devil in the Dark recently to kind of refresh our minds. So, can you tell us why are those two your favorite episodes, and then maybe Jessica go into why Voyager and TNG are your favorite?
Sure. So Devil in the Dark, and that's the one with the Horta in it, of course, from the original series. There's something about that episode that really just like made a big impact on me when I watched it. You know, it's this episode that sort of starts off in a typical monster movie fashion, and then it ends up being this incredible, very Star Trek vision thesis on how you, once you have understanding, different species can get along. And I just love this thing that, you know, going from the point of there's this monster killing our miners to the miners saying, oh, the cute little baby rock eaters they're adorable. and that switch and everything in it really made, you know, kind of made sense to me, and I love that vision of the world. I love that vision of the future, that people really get along and the only thing you need to do is understand. And is a very Star Trek sort of episode to me. Lower Decks was potentially my favorite, TNG episode. And I think there's something about television shows when they really experiment and they put the main characters whom you know so well and you put them as the background and you see them from a different perspective. And I really love that playing with it, because you recognize Riker and you can understand, you know, how someone could be sort of afraid of him or not get along with him in that perspective. But you also understand what his thought process is, and you sort of understand that Riker's a good guy through this. I would actually claim that Lower Decks is an episode where I would say, if I had to show someone just a good episode of television that happened to be Star Trek, that one might be my choice.
Oh, it's fantastic storytelling. That one really got me in the feels that I didn't really capture when I originally watched it, when it originally aired. And it's a pretty powerful episode, I think.
Yeah, when I saw that episode, I remember actually when that episode came out, I was blown away how well it was written and how much I just wanted to know those characters, those ensigns that are all trying so hard to enhance their careers, you know?
Yeah, even though, like, you kind of knew Nurse Ogawa, and then the Bajoran lady, she saw her in the Red Squad episode, so that was kind of a nice carryover.
First duty, but something, yeah.
Yeah, but for characters that you really didn't ever see much or care all that much about, it's just amazing how well that episode's written that makes you care for these people that you barely get to see, and then one is snuffed out in the very same episode.
Yeah, and I do agree with that idea of the characters being the main characters becoming a backdrop, and that you can bounce these other characters off of, which is it's just amazing, right? I was blown away when I first saw that, and that was whatever 80 something, you know, or maybe 90. So, but yeah, that's a great episode. And Devil in the Dark is one of my favorites too. I love that one. It's you hit it right on the head. It's how, you know, it starts off with a monster. Almost a monster story, and then all of a sudden becomes a story of discovery and maybe the first handshake between two different species. So,
and it does start off kind of scary. I mean, like I didn't think about it when I was a kid, but thinking about it as an adult, thinking back to what it might have been like as a kid,
kind of scary for Star Trek.
Yeah,
yeah. When Schmitter gets it in the beginning,
you don't expect that.
I would love to see more episodes like Lower Deck, and I would love to see Star Trek, if it comes back to television, to be scary like Devil in the Dark.
Yeah, and then have the payoff at the end. And how about you, Jessica? Is there any specific episodes that you have a strong feeling for or connection with?
Yeah, so a lot of my love for Voyager is not just, you know, the quality of it and me loving it in its own right, but it's also the special sentimentality and nostalgia of it being the first one that I got into, and I was really into it as a kid, and I watched it with my whole family and all that, so that's definitely part of why I love it so much. But and it also obviously had the first female captain, and that I'm a girl, so I really liked seeing a girl in charge. That was really exciting to me. Some of my favorite episodes, this one's embarrassing, but I have, again, more nostalgic love for The Killing Game because I wrote a lot of terrible fan fiction involving it. That's the one. That's the one with the Hirogen and they're all in World War II and trying to kill everyone.
I want to see some of this fan fiction about The Killing Game.
Could you send some of that my way? It's real gone. That was back before they had the internet where it lived on in infamy.
It's real gone instead of fake gone?
Yeah.
It's real gone. Sorry. You can't even get it on a wave. It's on a paper. You know that thing people used to write on paper. It's gone.
Those notebooks are gone, right?
No!
But I've always really been into any episode that dealt with time travel. I've always been some of my favorites across all the series, or alternate universes. Which great thing I'm working on this game because those were always my favorite. some of my favorite ones from Voyager were Timeless. That was the Harry Kim screwed it up moment where he sent the wrong doohickey, the coordinates or whatever he was sending, it was wrong, and the ship crashed and froze, and he and Chakotay had to go back and fix his mistake. I really liked that one. I also liked Deadlock, which is not really timey-wimey, but alternate universe, and it was like, oh, they killed him! Oh, wait, but he's back. He's safe too, so yay.
What a mess. They brought him back.
Yeah, someone had to carry the baby.
The baby could walk. Those things, the half-Gatarian and half-humans. Like, Naomi was like 3, and she looked like she was 12. Next time we see her, I mean, like, she could have walked by the time of, 6 hours. I mean, come on.
Yeah, and then Next Generation, like I said, I was Troy for Halloween, so Troy was my favorite character. So any show that kind of had a lot of Troy, I really liked as a kid. I especially really liked the one where she took the bridge officer's test and Riker was supervising her. And I liked that not just because of how they interacted, but also because I was like, this would never happen that he would do it.
It's a conflict of interest.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
I'm like, but I'm so glad this happens in television shows where you don't care how realistic it is, so you can actually see them interact in this way.
It's the future. We're a lot laxer on nepotism.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Right. No, it's
or they just refuse to acknowledge that there is a conflict of interest. They're like, no, we're all too enlightened for that. That wouldn't possibly. Yeah.
I know, and I think
they were testing him at the same time just to see how well he could handle an awkward situation.
it's all a mind game.
It's efficiency. You have to test everybody at the same time.
Well, if anybody, Riker can handle awkward situations, so. He's king of that.
Well, when you create enough of them, you become very adept at it.
Those awkward moments in the turbo lift.
That silent pause. Oh, man, I did it again, didn't I?
I'll wait for the next one.
Can we just use a teleporter from now on?
Yeah, no, can you just beam me to my room?
Hey, O'Brien, can you just beam me here?
The Jeffries tubes become a lot more popular. It's the new fitness, policy. So it's not because he's trying to avoid anybody. He's trying to stay in shape.
That's right. The Riker physique.
You are the most beautiful woman in the galaxy. You don't know how long I've wanted to tell you that.
But you're afraid.
Yes.
Of me?
Of us, of what we might become. Then you're inviting me in.
I'm not sending you away.
That's more than I expected.
Is it as much as you hoped?
To hope is to recognize the possibility. I had only dreams.
Dreams can be dangerous.
Not these dreams. I dream of a galaxy where your eyes are the stars and the universe worships the night.
Careful. Putting me on a pedestal so high you may not be able to reach me.
Then I'll learn how to fly. You are the heart in my day and the soul in my night.
We lost 2 more relays. I can't!
Shut up, kid.
So Tim, for us today, has a moment where Barkley shines.
Here's the thing, though. Barkley always shines. Every moment with Barkley is him winning.
I would sort of agree with that. I liked how he turned himself into the computer in the holodeck, but go ahead with what you were going to go with.
I mean, that's the problem. I can't just settle on one. There's him being a spider.
He brought Voyager back, basically.
He brings Voyager back. Perfect.
Yes, yeah. Bring in a side character to fix your problem in Voyager. That's awesome.
He did that a lot, though. Because he had to repair the doctor in the one episode as well. When he got stuck in the loop early on. I think it was like the beginning of season two.
Yeah, he basically saved that whole ship and the crew. So that's a pretty big win moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's really everything. He saves the Enterprise like two or three times. Every episode he's in practically saves the Enterprise.
And he saves First Contact Day. He's there helping rebuild the Phoenix.
Exactly. Without him, the Borg would have taken over.
Exactly. Good thing he wasn't crawling around the Jeffries tubes when the Borg first showed up. would Barclay like short-circuit the Borg? Maybe that would be a good thing.
No, I mean, that would be the most disastrous thing is if they added his distinctiveness to their own.
Would they start to stutter and be like not sure of themselves? Resistance might not be futile.
Oh, right, but then they would find a hidden inner reserve of strength and be even better than before.
Oh, no.
Oh, but then they would go in the holodeck and like pretend to not be Borg.
That's perhaps, funny. Or just imagine all other species as shorter.
That's great. Oh my god.
Any other Barclay moments you like to highlight?
You know, I always liked when he was, after he had been super smart and interfaced with the computer, that he still knew a little bit more chess. He remained a little bit better at chess.
I love, you know, going to Deanna Troi. I loved how he, like, made her, like, the goddess of love or whatever in the holodeck program.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah. And they all got to see... That was the worst part about it, is they all got to see his holodeck program and how embarrassing that was. Oh, man. That was terrible.
I mean, but look at it this way. Like, after that happens, like, there's nowhere to go but up in your relationship. You've laid it all bare. There's nothing left. Like, you can stop worrying. It's all out there now.
And Deanna Troi kept talking to him for years after this event too. And
well, that speaks a lot to Deanna's character, I think. Yeah, that she could just face him and go, okay, this guy has some pretty perverted thoughts about me, but I'm going to still treat him as a decent human being.
There's no HR on that ship. It's just her. So.
She's got to be able to forgive them for stupid things.
And then she probably goes to everyone else's holodeck programs to see if they have her image in them.
Oh, my God. That's so funny.
Yeah, honestly, the goddess love, that's not that bad. That was rather embarrassing, but flattering.
Yeah, but... I mean, come on. It's like, you know, if we all had any kind of our inner thoughts projected for everybody, you know, I think we'd feel a little...
Oh, society would be a very different place. Politician what? Yeah, no, that would be very, very, very awkward.
But, I might never come... I mean,
it could have been worse.
I might never come out of my hiding hole and I just stay hidden away if that was me.
No, maybe we'd all become nice and enlightened like in Star Trek. Maybe that's the trick. That's what led us to that point, is they made public everyone's internet browsing history.
Oh, so down with Snowden.
Yeah.
Let it be public.
Become a nicer person.
Yeah, you're forced to become nicer once everyone can see your horrible holodeck program.
There might be truth in that, but I wouldn't want to be the first one to take that plunge.
Yeah, I'd imagine that after that,
I don't know if
Barclay's just got it's his job to scrub the rest of the holodeck programs. Like, you had the worst one, man. You gotta, it's your job to do the censorship now.
Right. He's the one who's got to write those protocols now to clean up those.
Yep.
But sanitation service.
He'll just copy the parts he likes and put them to his.
Ooh, I didn't think of that.
I mean, he's not the only one though who ever made like a holodeck program with like questionable behavior from people who are supposed to be his, you know, his colleagues. You know, Tuvok made that whole Insurrection Alpha One, where, you know, all his fellow Maquis people were just murdering up the ship and taking it over.
Oh, yeah, that's
and
true.
And if I was one of the Maquis and I saw it, I'd be like, dude, thanks a lot.
We were trying so hard.
I'm trying to work with it here. Come on. Oh my god. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I think
filled out my TPS reports and everything.
Yeah, right. I think we'd all be in trouble no matter what. Whether it was murderous thoughts or sexually debased thoughts, we'd all be in trouble if we all had those thoughts put onto a holodeck program somewhere. So,
oh yeah,
yeah, that would be bad.
I don't know if this is a if this is actually a Harry Kim fails, but it's kind of a funny Harry Kim moment that I always laugh at. Is so whenever he's on the holodeck with Tom, he's always got to be, you know, the sidekick guy, basically. You know, I'm Buster Kincaid. I don't ever get to be Captain Proton. And then, you know, the one time he goes in the holodeck by himself, you know, to be the hero in his Beowulf program, it all goes terribly, terribly wrong.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Not that it didn't go wrong other times, but that always makes me laugh for maybe the one day where he was like, all right, I'm tired of being the sidekick. I'm going to go be the hero one weekend in my own holodeck program. And oops, no. That I got eaten by a holographic entity.
Yeah, he disappears.
Yeah.
Maybe he should have picked a little less grand thing to be hero of.
Yeah. Yeah, he, they don't really explain what happened to him during that time when he was, like, missing. I wonder if he was, like, actually stuck in the stomach of the creature.
They probably just put him in the corner of the holodeck and put a force field around him.
Just put him to sleep or something. That's funny, because the doctor had to go save him in that one.
Yeah, Doctor became Beowulf, which is pretty sweet. Love Doctor episodes.
Yeah, oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Okay, I'm remembering the episode now.
So, wrapping up, do y'all have any other closing thoughts, ideas about Star Trek or Star Trek timelines that you'd like everyone to hear about?
I will reiterate that folks should go to disruptorbeam.com and sign up for the Bridge Crew program, and also making an account, you can sign up for our forums, which is a good way to interact with us as we're making the game. You'll keep up to date with the game and how we're progressing with it, but also the forums are a good way to give us developers feedback as well. We have some we're members of our team are in the forums, and our customer support and community management folks are in the forums. So we do actually really pay attention to that. And, if you ask us questions or have ideas about the game, that's a really good place to bring that up.
And
we'd love to hear like you said, one matchup you mentioned that I thought it sounds great is how would Kirk react to Worf with all his history with the Klingons? Like, stuff like that is what we love to see on the forums, people throwing out, you know, those kind of incongruous matchups that are situations or scenarios that they think would be really cool to explore in this world of temporal anomalies gone rampant. Stuff like that we'd love to hear people's thoughts on.
Cool. Very nice.
I have to say that I loved your sign up process. Between the web layout and just how easy it was just to sign in and that, because I went through this the other day just to see what it was like and to get an insight as to more of what you guys are doing and that, and that was kind of nice. I like your layout. It's very, very easy to read everything.
Well, oh, thank you. That's... Yeah, Tim and I can't take any credit for that, but thank you.
It's good. No, it's some folks in the company really happy to hear that. That's great.
Well, I've been going through your forums and stuff like that, and it's easy to access everything and get to know everybody and get caught up. And it, for somebody that's just now signing in, I feel like in a couple of days after reading up on everything, I'll be comfortable, able to contribute. So, I mean, I just want to let you guys know that your community that you guys have built is really nice.
And do you guys have any social media that y'all answer to that you might want to give out for people to follow you on Twitter or anything like that?
Me personally, I do not, but I believe Disruptor Beam has a Twitter account. Probably, I think Star Trek Timelines itself has one as well. Our We have a Facebook page. Any one of these is actually great for keeping up to date with what we're doing, and we'll always be letting folks know what the most recent news about the game is.
And I'll go ahead and link all those in the show notes.
Same here. Same here. I'm an old fart. I don't have Twitter or any of that, but yeah, Disruptor Beam has a presence everywhere, and especially our YouTube channel is becoming a really great outlet for there's a full walkthrough of the PAX demo there and lots of other great stuff. So that's another great channel to follow.
Yeah, I'll try to get all these links set up on the show notes so that when people check it out, they can find your guys' Twitter, Facebook, YouTube channel, get all that out there. So everyone have easy access. Everyone who hears will have easy access to sign up and take a look at Star Trek Timelines.
Well, fantastic.
I'd like to thank you so much, Tim and Jessica, for joining us on this episode of Synthaholics and talking about the game a little bit. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Live long and prosper. Thank you all for listening. All my music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or follow them on Twitter at warp11. You can find us at synthaholics.com. You can email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at SynthaholicDuo. If you'd like to follow us individually, you can follow me at David_J_Duncan.
You can follow me, Aaron O'Brien, at Blackbird2004. Faith, where can they find you?
You can find me at Faith Hertzberg.
And please subscribe to us. We are on iTunes. We are on Stitcher. And if you have a chance, please rate and review so we can improve. And any feedback is welcome. And so we can make the show even better for you.
Live long and prosper, guys. At the stars we did gaze. The next morning he left stinking of gin. Well, McCoy, my boy, come mix me a drink. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink. And we'll cry till we laugh. And we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Is the best.
Oh, wow. You're the first one to come out in Barkley's corner.
I love Barkley.
I love him.
Barkley's the best.
You could do a one-time only segment, Barkley wins, and Tim could give you something.
Yeah. Barkley wanted something.
Barkley wins. I love Barkley.
Time he got turned into a spider and then made a web in the engine core?
Yes, that was great.
Yeah.
That's a good episode.
That's winning.
Yes.
Definitely.